Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. I don't know about you, but I sure hope this Arctic air will lead to fewer mosquitoes next summer. Larry Mueller here and my guest PJ Leash in the studio with me today to talk about that. He's the manager of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab, has degrees in biosciences and entomology, and we'll hear his forecast on pest populations, and he'll also take your bug-related questions. So I hope you'll give us a call. Number is 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Certainly would love to hear from you. And PJ Leash, welcome back.
Pleasure to be here, Larry.
Great to have you with us. Well, what about this cold temperatures? I know a lot of people are hoping the cold will reduce the pest population. What do you think?
Yes, I've had lots and lots of questions along those lines recently. The short answer is we won't know until spring and summer get here to ultimately see what happens. And it boils down to the fact that each insect kind of responds to winter a little bit differently. Some of our insects just don't stand a chance of overwintering here. It's just too cold for them. So they either die out and maybe migrate back up here from southern states. Or if you think of something like monarch butterflies, they actually leave and migrate south in the winter. So some just can't spend the winter here. We have a lot of other insects that do pretty well with their winters, and they've been around for, you know, thousands of years, so they're used to the cold. Certain insects have what we refer to as cryoprotectants. It's essentially antifreeze. They make chemicals in their bodies so that when the cold comes, it's not as much of a shock on them, and they can make it through the winter that way. We've got other insects that essentially seek out shelter. They may sneak into our homes, things like box elder bugs and Asian lady beetles and things like that. There are other ones that may find a hollow log, a rock pile, small cave, a rock overhang or something like that, and it's a little bit more sheltered there. And other ones spend the winter under the snow. And we actually have a special term for this zone where the ground meets the snow. We call it the subnivium. And if you think of the air temperature above the snow, it could be minus 20.
Yeah.
But right where that snow meets the ground, that little zone there, that might be right around freezing. So it's relatively mild in that area. So things like ticks that are hanging out there might not be impacted a whole lot when there's snow cover. Now, we could have a different story if we had brutal cold without snow cover. I would expect that to have much more of an impact on insects and ticks and things like that.
Certainly in some areas of the state, that has been the case up until just recently. For example, in the Madison area, we really didn't have a snow cover. Now we have a little one.
Right. Yeah. So it is going to vary quite a bit throughout the state, as you said. The northern parts of the state, I know they've had good snow for cross-country skiing and things like that for quite a while. So they've really got a pretty good insulating ground cover. Down in the southern part of the state, we had just a little bit of snow and then it all melted out. We've now gotten some recently to re-insulate things. When I look back at overall big impacts, I mean, we had a good example of this not that long ago, about 3-4 years ago, winter of 2013-2014. That was a brutally cold winter, and we saw all kinds of interesting trends. Things like Japanese beetles really got knocked back and all kinds of other insects. Is that going to happen again this year? We don't know for sure. My impression is that it doesn't seem as cold. When I think back about that brutal winter 4 years ago, we had municipalities telling folks to leave their water running because big pipes were... We haven't really had those reports, at least I haven't heard of any yet, so it doesn't seem as cold. Will it affect some insects? Probably. When I think of some of our more southern insects that maybe do better in Illinois and Missouri, and they're just getting into the state, things like praying mantids, which we had lots of reports of last summer, they don't overwinter very well here in the cold, so I would expect creatures like that to get knocked back by the cold that we did have right around New Year's time.
What are mosquitoes? What's the life cycle on a mosquito and how might cold affect them?
Yeah, so great question. It turns out in Wisconsin, we've got about 60 or more mosquito species, and each mosquito species has differences in their life cycle and how they go through the winter. Some, which we commonly refer to as our floodwater mosquitoes, these are the ones we get huge numbers of, especially in late spring, early summer, after the spring rains. They tend to go through the winter as eggs, and in general, insect eggs tend to be a pretty resilient, tough life stage, and they can really withstand some harsh conditions. In some cases with those mosquitoes, the eggs can sit there perhaps a couple of years before hatching when the conditions are right. So they really make it through the winter pretty well. We do have other mosquitoes that can actually spend the winter as adults, and they will seek out a small cave. In some cases, they'll even get into folks' homes in a basement crawl space, because that's, if you think about it, a cave-like environment.
Sure.
So it seems a little odd, but I've actually had reports recently of folks complaining about an occasional mosquito in their house, and it intuitively, it doesn't seem to make sense, but when you think about some of our mosquitoes spending the winter as adults, it does actually make sense in those cases.
You know, one of the bugs that I had wondered about was the emerald ash borer, and wondering if there's any impact on them.
Yes, that's another great question. Emerald ash borer is just a terrible insect in terms of what it's doing to our ash trees. Now, we had a lot of those same types of questions 4 years ago with that cold winter. The gist I'm getting is that even though it's been cold, it probably hasn't been cold enough. With emerald ash borer, we know if you get down to about minus 20 or so, you start killing off a fair number of them. But some USDA researchers looked at this 4 years ago with that brutal winter, and they found to really have an impact, you'd have to get down to about minus 30 for maybe a couple of days. And it was cold, but it wasn't quite that cold.
And if it got to minus 30 for a few days, they could still blow in from someplace else.
Well, some insects certainly could. If you think about emerald ash borer as an example, the adults themselves usually don't fly that far. So hypothetically, if the entire state of Wisconsin got down to minus 30 for a couple of days, that could really do a number on emerald ash borer populations potentially.
That would be good news as far as I'm concerned. PJ Leash, our guest today, taking a look at the world of insects with him. Questions for him, I hope you'll give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Or go ahead, if you have an insect photo and or question, you can also post it up on our Facebook page. So we'd certainly love to have you do that as well. 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. The Wisconsin Garden Expo is coming up. I'll be there on Saturday morning of it. That is the 10th of February, and you're usually there the whole time, aren't you?
Yeah, so I'm not going to be there Friday of this year. I've got a speaking engagement in Sheboygan that day, but I'm going to be around most of the afternoon Saturday, as well as all day Sunday. And even though I won't be there, we're going to have entomology faculty members and staff there all weekend, all expo, answering questions.
Do people ever bring in insects?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sometimes folks might just find something crawling around in their house a couple days before Garden Expo, and they remember to bring it in, and we kind of diagnose it on the spot for them. So that certainly happens, or you can stop by with insect pictures, and if they're good enough, we can take a peek at those and hopefully identify them for you as well.
Well, we can take some calls. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. Give a call. David in Waterloo emailed to say he has been seeing one big black bug in his bathroom for a week or so. He gets rid of it, and the next day there's another one. Should he be concerned?
In this case, I just don't have enough information, I think, to figure out what it might be. David, if you are listening, if you have any pictures of it, you could post on the Facebook page, or if you were to email me the pictures, I could get a better idea. When I think of big black bugs, especially for Waterloo area, I can think of things like brown marmorated stink bug can be kind of dark colored, and they like to sneak indoors, so that could be a possibility. If it were more something along the lines of a spider, there's a couple I can think of. Overall, for things that would be in your house this time of the year, it's probably not a concern. I would view it more as kind of a nuisance pest or situation to deal with. But again, if you can find the bug or you have pictures of it and send it to us or email it to me, I can get a better peek. I can give you a more definitive answer.
Or even more of a description of it. Is it a quarter inch long? Is it an inch long? Does it have a shield-like appearance? All things like that can all help.
Yeah.
Carol in Lake Mills, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling, Carol.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am concerned also, and I was half listening after I discussed with Jill the problem I have. The small bug that I have identified just through research, I think, is a member of the stink bug family, which looks like the tarnished plant bug. It is browned, it is shield-shaped, and it is a real nuisance. It has invaded several homes in our block area here, and maybe beyond that.
Yeah.
Okay. And Carol, how big are these insects that you're seeing?
I would say this is about, well, it almost looks like the ones that have overwintered, which have kind of just holed up in molding in the house and in other areas, have grown almost over the winter. And, I mean, if that's possible, and it's a half an inch at least.
Okay. Yeah, so the half an inch size is an important clue. What I suspect you're probably dealing with, given your location in the state, is this newer invasive stink bug species called the brown marmorated stink bug. It's not everywhere yet, but the worst areas are kind of Madison, from Dane County over to Milwaukee, Waukesha area. We have lots of reports, that part of the state. And then the Fox River Valley, Fond du Lac up to Green Bay, lots of reports. But they tend to be about a half inch long. Now, once they sneak in and fall, they're not going to grow any. They just kind of sit there. They usually don't do a whole lot for the winter. Ideally, they'd like to get to a spot that's warm enough, they're not going to freeze, but if it's too warm, that can be bad because they become active. They're actually burning through their winter energy reserves. If that happens, though, and they're wandering around the house, they're really not going to hurt anything, but they can be a bit of a nuisance. And being a stink bug, they can smell bad if you disturb them. It's a rather pungent odor if you haven't experienced it before. Probably the best thing to do in these cases, catch them in a Tupperware and toss them outside or dispose of them or even flush them down the toilet if you want. You can use the hose attachment on the vacuum cleaner. Just be aware that it may release that scent and you have to kind of cope with that for a little while.
Sure. Okay. I had just never seen them before, ever, and they really have invaded.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll be able to deal with it, Carol. Thanks so much for calling.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your insect questions. I'm Larry Mueller. My guest today, P.J. Leash from the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the world of insects today with P.J. Leash, you can join in too at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. And if you've got a photo, an insect photo you want to share with us, post that up on our Facebook page. Love to see that. Lots of callers online, so let's go back to the phones. Chuck in Clyman, Green Bay area, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Hi, I'm actually from the Juneau area. We've had an enormous box elder tree in our front yard since we've lived there for the last 26 years. I took the tree down this year. We've had a lot of box elder bugs around the house through the years, especially in the fall when they cluster up on the siding, yep. On the south side of the house and so on. I'm wondering if removing that tree is going to relate in any way to maybe fewer box elder bugs.
I would say potentially, but it probably will depend on what other trees you have in your area. So if you think about box elders, they're technically a type of maple tree. And the same box elder bug insects can feed on some of our maples, on the seeds as well, things like silver maples. I've also heard of them feeding on seeds of some other trees like ash trees. So if you only had one box elder tree in your yard and no other maples or ash around and you remove that, that might help in the long run. But otherwise, if your neighbors have box elders or silver maples or other ones nearby, you'll probably still have around. I've also seen in some cases, and in my own backyard would be an example where I don't have box elders or maples in my yard specifically, but I still have some box elders around. They seem to be able to wander a little bit from their food sources.
Yeah, there you go. But it could help, Chuck. You never know. You'll just have to wait and see.
Box elder bugs are directly related to trees then?
Well, to a certain extent. I mean, they are associated with certain trees, like box elder trees, and as I mentioned, some of the maples, like silver maple, and then even things like ash, because that's what they feed on. They're feeding on really the seeds of those trees. That's their food source.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck, for calling. Let's take some more calls. Ben in Marshall, we'll go to you next. Hi, Ben. Thank you for calling.
Oh, I love this topic. When I bought the 1854 one-room stone schoolhouse, the first year I had tens of thousands of cluster flies that just would be on the windows, and I think they're parasites of earthworms. And then there was a ladybird, the Asian ladybug look-alike, you know, invasion, and I think they helped eat them up. And then both of them just disappeared. And box elders one year, and now I have no insects at all, hardly mosquitoes. It's crazy.
Interesting. Well, what conditions might create something like that?
Yeah. Well, I guess my general thoughts on
birds now.
Yeah.
My general thoughts on this situation, I mean, we've got an old stone building, and when I think of old stone buildings, old farmhouses and things like that, if you were to take a close peek at the exterior of those buildings, there's all kinds of nooks and crannies where these insects can sneak in. And many of the insects you mentioned, like the cluster flies and Asian lady beetles and box elder bugs, they are insects that like to sneak indoors in the fall, and that is their overwintering strategy. They are looking for a sheltered spot. So you have an old building, you tend to have these insects sneaking in. Now, in terms of the variation you've been noticing year to year, some years are good for cluster flies, some years are good for Asian lady beetles, some are good for box elder bugs. Each of these insects can be affected by various things in the environment. Sometimes the environmental conditions. So if we've got a rainy year, that's perhaps great for earthworms. Maybe end up having more cluster flies. And I've heard some reports to suggest that could be going on to a certain extent in some spots in the state. Other years, it's harder to predict exactly what's driving it. But sometimes in a given year, we just have lots and lots of Asian lady beetles. About 2-3 years ago, that was the case. This year, my impression is that they were a little bit quieter. So we do get this fluctuation year to year. Now, if you are still in that old building, if you have kind of sealed up those cracks and crevices already, that has probably helped tremendously. If you haven't, that would be something you could look at doing, because that will help in the future keep any of those insects outdoors.
Interesting. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate the call. And let's go to Philip in Hatley next, I believe. Philip, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, hello. I just wanted to know if there's any really good solution to get rid of those Asian beetles. Seems like every late spring into fall, they just swarm our house, and they're just everywhere, all over our kitchen and living room. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a couple things. One really important factor with some of these insects can be location of a home. If you are the one house on the top of a hill, for example, out in the country, you can be kind of a magnet for these things. Some of these insects, like the Asian lady beetles, in their native range in parts of China, they specifically cue in on vertical structures for overwintering places. And out in nature, that would be things like cliff faces. And I saw this last October, November, up at Devil's Lake, a warm weekend day. All those beetles are going to the cliffs to sneak in cracks and crevices to spend the winter. But in terms of what you can do, couple things. I had mentioned with the previous caller, if you take a look at the outside of your home or structure, look for cracks and crevices where they're sneaking in. If we can physically seal that up, caulk, expanding insulation foam, or other means, that can help physically prevent them from getting indoors. If you're in an old farmhouse, sometimes that just isn't feasible. Another thing we will commonly do is in the fall, before the insects start sneaking in, is you can do this yourself or you can hire a pest control company. We will spray a residual insecticide that lasts a couple of weeks on the exterior of our home. And we don't necessarily have to go all the way around. We focus on areas where the insects like to go, so the southern and western sides of the home where we get the afternoon sun, and focus on cracks and crevices around door frames, windows, soffit areas where the insects might be sneaking in. If we spray those areas, those products can do two things. If the insects contact it long enough, it can kill them. But also, many of those products have repellent properties. So the insects contact it, it irritates them, and they kind of go elsewhere and leave. So that can be another successful tactic as well.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Along the lines of the Asian lady beetle, Suzanne on Facebook asks about the life cycle of the Asian lady beetle and how many offspring can a single adult produce? Good questions there.
Yeah, good questions. So in terms of the general life cycle, so let's start with the winter months. So in theory, these Asian lady beetles find shelter, they hunker down for the winter months, and they're not really doing anything. If they're indoors, they can become active if it's warm enough. They're really not going to be able to reproduce indoors during the winter months because they're predators of things like aphids, which live on living plants. So eventually, though, they come out of sheltered areas in the spring, and they're going to start feeding on aphids. And depending on how warm it is, that will impact the number of generations they can have for you. A lot of our lady beetles can go through a generation in several weeks, maybe a month or so, roughly. So we can actually have multiple generations per year. That might also be impacted by their food sources. If they've got lots of food, that's good conditions for them. So if it's a good aphid year, they've got lots of prey to munch on. When lady beetles go to lay eggs, they're typically laying eggs, and the eggs themselves look like miniature yellowish footballs. They have that oblong kind of shape of a football. They're often laid in clusters of about 20 to 30 or so at a time. So each individual female, when she's laying clusters of eggs like that, that can give rise to dozens of offspring potentially.
Oh, there we go. On to, let's see, where are we going next? Chris in Watertown, I think, is up next. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. How are you guys doing?
Great.
You're wonderful.
Thank you.
Okay. In early November, I finally convinced my landlord to get an exterminator in. They found a hornet's nest between the walls. Located somewhere between the basement walls from my basement, a hornet's nest.
Yeah.
Because I had a gazillion hornets by that time. So, but I had been finding live hornets ever since. Even until last week, one stung me as I tried to kill it. So, my question is, I get the exterminator back, but how the heck, number one, am I going to be sure when the exterminator comes back that they're going to finally be killed? But are these hornets going to be able to come back in the spring from somewhere outside?
Yeah.
How am I going to be sure that these hornets are going to finally, number one, be dead and not be able to come back in?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so sounds like in this case, you're probably dealing with yellow jackets, and we've got a number of species.
Yep, that's what they are.
Yep, and some like to nest in hollow voids or cavities, so wall voids, hollow trees, and things like that. Now, generally what happens with all these, be it yellow jackets, bald-faced hornets, and paper wasps, they're all fairly close related. Their life cycle goes something like this. They have to start new nests in spring. The nests build up in size throughout the summer months, and then we get to about September. The nests are at peak size, and then late September through October, the nests are dying out. And two things are really going on. We can get cold frost, which can kill them. Now, in a sheltered location like a wall void, that might take longer for it to occur. But another really important thing that is happening is they're starving to death because they are predators of other insects like caterpillars and things like that. Now what happens is the colony all dies out except for certain specific females that are designated to be the queens next year, and they will start their own nests next year. Now, so everyone dies in the nest except those certain females. They will look for sheltered overwintering locations, and you might have a couple here, a couple there. So I suspect that's what's going on in your case. The colony itself has probably died out, and in general, they don't reuse that same nest. You probably have a few of these overwintering queens for next year. that got in through a gap in the siding or something like that, it's going to be really hard to treat for those because it's not a concentrated spot where they're all going to be hanging out. It's probably a few scattered here and there. What I would look at for next year, though, is take a peek at your siding on your house, and if there are any gaps or holes where new queens could get in to try and start a nest next year, try and plug those up now. That'll prevent a nest. And also next year, if you start seeing any activity, get on the nest early in the season when there's just, you know, 10, 12 hornets or yellow jackets in the nest, and it's small, rather than if we wait till late summer, there's hundreds or thousands present. So if we keep an eye out in spring and early summer and kind of nip it in the bud then, that can really quiet things down very effectively.
There we go.
Well, I'm going to have to ask my landlord to do that because it took me 4 phone calls to him, and he respond.
Yeah. Well, get on the landlord, and we'll see what happens, Chris. I hope it works out for you. Thank you so much for calling. And we'll turn to Alan in Pittsville next. Alan, your turn. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Just one quick question. I'm curious how climate change in general, and not just this specific cold snap, has affected insect populations in the state. And I'm especially interested in how it's affected the populations and species of crop pests, corn, soybeans, alfalfa pests, those sort of things.
Sure.
Sure. So great question. Now, when it comes to climate change, it's really hard to kind of tease out the impacts on individual species. And one of the reasons for that is we've got about 20 to 25,000 species in the state. So we just don't have folks studying all those. We do know some general trends, though, and if you think about something specifically like crop pests, a lot of our important crop pests can't make it through the winters here. They die out, and each spring, those insects have to kind of migrate up here, or really what happens in a lot of cases, they get blown up here by storm fronts. So we often get that first really big thunderstorm system in the spring, and a lot of our crop pests get carried up like that. Some of our cutworm moths and army worms and things along those lines, and some of our leafhoppers too. So if we have climate change, and in theory, if we're getting, say, earlier springs, that gives them a longer kind of growing season to get up here and potentially maybe go through an extra generation or two in some situations. So we can kind of look to the southern states and see their pest pressure and get an idea of what might be in store for us in the future.
So keep an eye on the south, or at least those states that are immediately south of us?
Right, exactly. That's a good point, Larry. Yeah, if we look at, what's the pest situation like in Illinois right now? Well, in 50 years or so, or, you know, somewhere down there, we might have a very similar situation to that.
Oh, interesting.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alan. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's go to Roger next in Deer Park. Hi, Roger. Roger, are you there? Maybe we lost Roger. Jason in Milwaukee emailed to ask how this cold will affect jumping worms.
Ooh, so that's a really good question. And it's going to be one of those things we're going to have to wait and see for sure. I'm not expecting it to wipe them out because we've had jumping worms in the state for a number of years now. They seem to make it okay through that really bad winter about 4 years ago. One thing that can kind of help them out to a certain extent is the fact that they go through the winter in this cocoon stage, which is almost like an egg case if you think of it that way. And that's a fairly kind of freeze-resistant, fairly tolerant life stage. They're down in the soil, which at this point in the year is fairly insulated with snow, so they're going to be protected to a certain extent along those lines. So with that said, unless it gets brutally, brutally cold, I wouldn't expect this cold to wipe them out, unfortunately. So I think they're still going to make it through the winter okay, and we're still going to have problems with those going into the future, unfortunately.
And sort of along those lines, Dave from Oshkosh emailed to wonder about the Japanese beetles and how they're handling the cold.
So this is kind of a million-dollar question. I've had a lot of folks asking about this. I'm going to be really curious to see what happens with Japanese beetles this year. I'm keeping my fingers crossed at this point. What we saw 4 years ago with that really cold winter is that the following summer, 2014, Japanese beetle pressure was fairly low in the state. I suspect that's because that really deep freeze got down into the ground where the grubs are spending the winter, probably caused some significant grub mortality. Now this year, yes, we had that cold snap. Was it cold enough? Only time will tell. But overall, I'm keeping my fingers optimistically crossed, hoping that maybe Japanese beetles will be a little bit lower this coming summer, because they certainly were bad many parts of the state in 2017.
A listener called to remind that cedar oil can be used to repel some insects.
Yeah, so there's a number of these natural plant oil type products that are out there, and they have been studied. We know that they can have repellent properties to a certain extent, and each kind of essential oil and natural plant extract is going to work a little bit differently. One of the challenges with those type of products is that these natural oils, in general, they typically don't last that long. So we can have mosquito repellents made with some of these oils, and yeah, they might work to a certain extent, but they might not work that long. Could be a couple hours for some of the cedar oils you're spraying on maybe the side of your house or mulch. It might work a day or two or something like that, but they tend to be very, very short-lived and kind of break down quickly compared to these other products.
Let's go back to the phones and to Alicia in Secor, Illinois. Hi, Alicia. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. I have a question about a spider that I have in my basement. It's really, in overall shape, it's really big. It's got extremely long legs, like good 2.5 to 3-inch legs is the biggest one that I've seen. It's kind of got a cylindrical abdomen. It's up to the body length, with the abdomen is about 3/4 of an inch to an inch. And it just drops out of the ceiling right in front of your face. I just call it a creepy butt spider, because that's what it just looks like. It's really weird looking. And that's what it does. It just can be sitting there watching TV, or I had one drop down in front of me when I was doing my dishes, and it's just freaky that they do this, and I was just wondering what it was and why that they do that.
Okay.
Yeah, so in this case, you know, a picture would certainly help me narrow it down. Often with spiders, I've got to kind of see the number and arrangement of the eyes to really narrow down a spider family and potentially a species. Given the size, though, I would really wonder about possibly something along the lines of a wolf spider. And then we've got some close relatives, some of the fishing spiders, for example, if you're near water.
We have a bunch of wolf spiders, and they don't look nothing like that.
Okay.
They're really thin, like spindly legs.
Okay.
And it's brown.
Okay.
But it's not fuzzy. It doesn't have any fuzz on it, so I know it's not a wolf spider, and it's not any of the wood spiders that we have either.
Okay. Well, just a quick note on wolf spiders. A lot of folks think if it's hairy, it's got to be a wolf spider, but there's actually an amazing diversity of wolf spiders. Some are really huge, some are teeny tiny. With the long spindly legs, though, I wonder if it could be something like one of our cellar spiders, which sometimes folks mix up and maybe call it daddy long legs or something along those lines. They can be pretty common indoors. They're harmless to people. They often make the cobwebs up in the corner of your rooms, and they're common in garages and places like that. But overall, they can be pretty common, really not going to hurt you at all. They're just a little bit of a nuisance.
Yeah. So we're not sure. If you get a good shot, a photo of one, Alicia, post it up on our Facebook page. We'll take a look at it.
What's the email?
Oh, it's the Facebook page is Larry Mueller Show.
Oh, okay.
All right, great. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And on to some more calls. Let's go to Ruth and Eau Claire next. Hi, Ruth. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the program. You talked about Japanese beetles just recently and how the cold would affect them, but I'm wondering, like last summer, I just had them all over my raspberries. They were horrible. And And so I'm assuming they've laid a lot of eggs, especially there. What can I do? I've heard about nematodes. Can you give me some suggestions to do something with my raspberries?
Yeah, so when it comes to Japanese beetles, they certainly can be a problem for raspberries and lots of other plants. Even though the adult beetles were feeding on your raspberries, I wouldn't expect there to be many young, that would be the white grubs or larvae of those beetles, in the patch of raspberries. The reason for that is female Japanese beetles specifically like to go to irrigated turf grass areas to lay their eggs. So golf courses historically have had major, major issues with Japanese beetles. So if they're in your yard, they're probably in your lawn rather than in the soil around those raspberries. Can we treat the Japanese beetle grubs? The short answer to that is yes. But it really depends on the situation. If you're treating the soil in the hopes of killing the grubs so that you won't have the beetles on your raspberries, it doesn't quite work like that. And the reason is that the adult Japanese beetles are very, very strong flyers. They can fly in from a half mile or a mile down the road. So even if you kill all the grubs in your lawn, they'll still fly in from your neighbor's yards and the park or golf course half mile down the road. And so it doesn't quite work like that. Where we tend to use the treatments for the Japanese beetle grubs in soil would be cases where we maybe have a history or we are expecting soil damage. Maybe if you're really finicky about your lawn, you want a really, you know, highly manicured, perfect-looking lawn, then in a case like that, we might treat it. Or if we've had cases with raccoons digging up grubs, that sort of thing, we might treat it. But again, if you're just trying to prevent adult damage on plants, targeting the grubs generally doesn't work for that, unfortunately.
Now, you can apply or use row covers. I think if you're, depending on how large your patch is, if it's not an enormous patch.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. So we do have some other tricks to prevent damage to your raspberries. As Larry mentioned, row covers. This would basically be a mesh cage or net put over your raspberries. So if you've got a small berry patch, that might be feasible. If you've got row after row, that can be a lot of work. You also have to remove that at certain times so pollinators can get in. So that complicates things. Yeah, but that could be done. Otherwise, we'd be looking more at using an insecticide on the raspberry plants themselves to prevent that adult damage in a case like this.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Ruth. Appreciate the call. PJ Leash, our guest today from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're taking a look at the world of insects with PJ Leash of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. Carol in Janesville has a question for you, PJ, so let's go there. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Last year, I was besieged with some type of a beetle that was flying through my house during the winter, and I had an exterminator come this fall, and he said he thought it was, I thought it was a stink bug, and he said he believes it's a soldier bug, and his spraying wouldn't do anything. It's about the size of a, bigger than my thumbnail, and it flies through the house. And when it sees a lampshade, it sometimes goes on a lampshade. I have a fireplace. I found two of them climbing up the stone wall this morning. When I've killed them, they don't stink, so I don't know if it is a stink bug.
Yeah.
Okay. In general, are they kind of shield-shaped in terms of their body
shape?
They
have a shield-shaped back, and they're kind of like a dried, muddy brown.
Okay. Yeah. I would really wonder if you are dealing with that brown marmorated stink bug, which we mentioned earlier in the show. Given your location in Madison or this general part of the state, they're very, very common here. They can be active in homes during the winter. They've got that brownish color, about half inch long, and a shield-shaped body. Sometimes if you squish them, you might not get that strong scent. Other times, you simply seem to brush them away with your hand, and it can smell pretty bad if they do kind of open up and release scent from those scent glands.
Yeah, so I'm betting on that as well.
What is that called again?
It's called the brown marmorated stink bug.
Okay.
You could look that up online. a photo of it, and I bet you that's what you're going to see.
It probably is. Oh, I thought because I didn't ever hear smell an odor that it wasn't a stink bug. Is there such a thing as a soldier beetle?
Well, there are indeed soldier beetles. There's a family of soldier beetles. I wouldn't expect you to find soldier beetles indoors. When I think of soldier beetles and when I encounter them, they tend to be outdoors on flowers and locations like that. So I really wouldn't expect you to find soldier beetles indoors. Maybe one could sneak in during the summer months, but this time of the year, that just wouldn't be consistent with their life cycles.
Okay. Is there a type of spray that I could use?
Well, at this point, it's not really going to help you much. The main story with these is the time we got to kind of pick and choose our battle is in the fall before they sneak indoors. Once they're already indoors, spraying doesn't really seem to help because for every one you see out in your kitchen or living room, you could have 5-10 hiding in a wall void or a soffit area. We can use insecticide sprays in the fall on the outside of our house to prevent them from getting in. Once they're indoors, though, I tend to just catch them up in a Tupperware and throw them outside or flush them or suck them up with a vacuum cleaner.
Okay, one last question. Is it possible that, I don't know where they would be coming in on the house. I do have a fireplace, and I have a fireplace in the basement, and I've seen some dead ones downstairs. So I'm wondering, do they come in through the fireplace, even though it is sealed?
Well, they could potentially. I mean, if you think of the size of these insects, about half inch long, but probably under a quarter inch thick. Yeah. So they don't need a very big gap to get in. So any gap on the outside of your home could be where the soffit meets the side of your house, a little gap under or around a window. Maybe the weather stripping isn't as good as it should be, that sort of thing. But any type of little nook and cranny, they can get in through potentially. And often when you start taking a close peek on the outside of your house, you'd be amazed how many nooks and crannies there are where they could get in from.
There we go, Carol. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And on to Roger in Deer Park next. Hi, Roger. Oh, I'm sorry, Roger. I missed you. We'll get to you in a second. Jim in Lake City, Minnesota up next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry and PJ. Thanks for taking my call. I guess my question is relating to gardens and stuff and kind of looking forward to that and had a problem with what we think is chiggers. And they don't bother me, but my wife can't be out in the garden anymore because she gets bit and nasty bites and last, you know, they last for quite a while. And I'm trying to figure out what, is there a preventative? Is there something that can kill them or you can protect your body against them or just what exactly is the life cycle and so on? I know it's an immature part, but I'll listen for your answer on that.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Sure. So chiggers are actually part of the juvenile life cycle of certain mites, and they are predators of other creatures. They basically take blood meals from other animals. If you run into them, though, what will happen is they'll try and bite humans. They don't burrow under skin or anything like that, but they basically bite. They realize we're not a good food source, and then they tend to detach. Now, in the upper Midwest, they don't tend to be that common. If you go to warmer areas down in the southern states, chiggers can be a lot more common and more of a nuisance. They do occur up here, but they tend to be kind of in isolated pockets. You could have them in a certain bramble patch, and other folks, you know, out in their yard, they just don't encounter them at all. So overall, they're not very common. In terms of what you can do to help is have a essentially physical clothing barrier. Long pants, long or taller socks. Maybe you can tuck the pants into the socks. That way we've got kind of a continuous barrier to help prevent them from getting to skin. Another thing that can help if you're going out doing garden work, if you go in as soon as you're done and take a warm shower, that might help dislodge any that would be on your legs. And that's typically where we see them, tends to be on the legs when folks encounter them. So you can use the barrier. You can also try repellents like DEET. That may help to a certain amount, but those are typically the precautions we do with chiggers.
Mm-hmm. And there are some lightweight I've pieces, articles of clothing that are designed to kind of keep insects out. I've seen shots of Phil Pelletieri, for example, wearing quite an outfit, and he can get around in the summer. I imagine you've done it too.
Yeah, I mean, if it's certainly 90 degrees, long khakis or something, like it doesn't sound very inviting, but there are all kinds of kind of lighter weight options. There are even some lightweight clothings designed for outdoors that have been essentially impregnated with an insecticide, permethrin, and that may be another way to help as well. We often will wear those clothes if we're going to an area with a lot of ticks, for example, and yeah. Ticks and these chigger mites are going to be closely related. So I would expect clothing like that to help as well. You can often find it at outdoor clothing goods stores, or you might be able to try getting a bottle of permethrin concentrate and treating some of your own clothes with that. You could give that a try as well.
Yeah, there we go. Good luck. Thank you, Jim, for calling. And on to Roger now in Deer Park. Roger, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello. I have a problem, and my neighbor also had the same problem about mosquitoes getting in the house in the fall, and we had them all the way up until Christmas. And I bought a zapper at a hardware store that's supposed to deal with mosquitoes. It releases carbon dioxide, but it didn't work at all. The only thing I can think of is they're coming through the garage, which is attached to the house. So the way I get them when they're in the house is I use a bug zapper, you know, one of those fly swatters that's electronic. And yep. That's the only way I get them. And I get up to 12 a day back this fall.
Wow.
So how do you get rid of mosquitoes? You know, I don't want to use bug spray.
Yeah. Yeah, so having mosquitoes indoors isn't a very common situation. We do have certain mosquito species active more in late summer and fall. We do have some that were mentioned earlier in the show that can spend the winter as adults, and sometimes they will try sneaking indoors to get to crawl spaces and cooler basements and locations like that. So when I would look at a situation like this, the mosquitoes, they're ultimately going to have an outdoor source. So one thing we need to do is try and figure out where exactly are they getting in, and can we really kind of seal up or tighten that up so that they're not getting in. I think that will be the best ultimate solution in this case. So if it's that garage, maybe if you have the habit of leaving the garage door open, leave it more closed, for example, check out the weather stripping and things like that. And also just do a general inspection, see is there something we're overlooking, maybe a window that just doesn't close up or seal up very well that they could be sneaking in through. I think if we can do that, that should really help cut down or eliminate the number that are getting in.
I'm wondering about the basement, too, if you've got a kind of like an open water sort of situation with a pipe or whatever. Could they be breeding in that kind of situation or not?
I'd say it could be a slight possibility. If you have something like a sump pump and you've got that crock in your basement, you know, take a peek at that. Just see, are there any little worm-like creatures swimming in there, kind of bobbing around? There's a slight chance you could have an indoor source like that. Typically, if that were to happen, the mosquitoes need something to feed on. It's generally organic material. Outdoors, they would feed on leaves that fall into a pond and things like that. So cleaning that out really well could help. I don't think that's a likely possibility, but it okay. could be. So take a peek if you do have any water sources like that indoors.
We bought those dunk things that you put in the sump pump just in case, and we didn't ever see any in the sump pump. So yeah. I think it's getting through the garage. That's my guess.
Yeah. Well, along the lines of the basement, one other thing I would peek at would be things like the basement window well windows. See, are those sealed up well? Because most folks don't pay very close attention to those. If one weren't sealed up very snugly, they could potentially get in looking for that cool kind of cave-like environment to spend the winter.
Yeah, we only have two of them, and they're sealed up very well. So
okay.
That's not it. The only thing I can think of is we had a crack underneath the doorstep, which I filled.
Okay.
But that was back in October, and we had them all the way until Christmas, and my neighbor gets them, so I don't know if they get in your house like in October, if you got a school of them that got in your house, would they last till Christmas, you know, a couple months like that, or what's their life cycle when they get in your house?
Well, typically what happens, if it is, say, a species that likes to overwinter as adults, they're going to get in and they're really looking for a cool location to kind of hunker down, and then in theory they would leave again in the spring. So they can last quite a while. If they were to sneak in and it's too warm, they can become active. So I've even had reports of active mosquitoes indoors in the last couple of weeks. Even when it's been really, really cold, it's because they snuck in sometime in the fall and it was just warm enough that they became active.
There we go. Thank you so much, Roger. Appreciate your call. I want to give Mike in Lake Mills a chance. Mike, hello.
Hi, good morning, folks. PJ, I'm an organic farmer. About 4 or 5 years ago, I had a serious problem with aster leafhoppers and a disease called aster yellows.
Yep.
You know, there's no way as an organic farmer to eradicate that. And the phytoplasm that is the disease is ridiculous to deal with. So what do you recommend?
Yeah, so in a case like this, it can be very tough, especially with an organic situation. And are you a flower grower, Mike?
No, vegetables.
Vegetables, okay. Yeah, outdoors, this is going to be pretty challenging. We do have some organic products, things like pyrethrins and a few other things, but they're just not going to last very long, maybe a couple of days tops. So that could be a lot of spraying. If we could do something like floating row covers, once those plants are established, and if it's a plant that doesn't need pollinators getting in, we could physically cover it and hopefully keep them out. That might be your best kind of organic option in a case like this.
Oh, boy. Mike, thank you so much. PJ Leash, our guest today from the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. He'll be with us right up till 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back. You stay with us. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network, talking insects today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, PJ Leash, who manages the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. Insect questions for him, the number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post photos and questions on our Facebook page. And Tony in Pittsville, I believe, up next. Tony, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. So just a couple quick things. I own a bug business, and when I go to a house, I always check under the siding at the bottom, because what happens is that wood, when they put those wood sheets on your house, that wood will warp over time, and there'll be gaps. It'll pull away from the house, so I think that that's where a lot of issues come from with mice and the Asian beetles. And then with the yellow jackets, I know it don't help in the winter, but in the summer I always tell people, you know, watch your house, because when the sun's out and it's warm, those yellow jackets, they'll really be coming and going, and they're really easy to spot in the sun, and you can find out right where they're coming and going and treat it. Usually I treat it with a powder. The powder will go in and fill up that void, and then they have to track through it. If you use a spray or an aerosol, you know, it just doesn't penetrate in there. You're just really getting the outside.
Very good tips there, I think. Thank you, Tony, for calling. And PJ, you're in agreement.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. When you think of the outside of your home and usually before fall really sets in, I tend to do a very close inspection the outside of my house with a can of expanding insulation foam or something along those lines. And as the caller had mentioned, that strip where the siding connects to your house down at the bottom. If you get down on your hands and knees and lie down and peek up into that crack, you can see where all kinds of insects can get in there. So once you start taking a close look, even though you think your house is sealed nice and tight, there's all kinds of nooks and crannies that are around.
Yeah. Tony, thank you again. Good tips. And Pat in Hilbert, will turn to you next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. For the man who told us that his wife can't go in the garden anymore because of chiggers, I had a terrible time with chiggers too, and I thought it was spiders in the house and all that. And when I found out what it was, I haven't had a chigger bite since. First of all, I do wear the long clothes and all that, but the important item is I don't kneel or sit on the ground. I wear boots that go halfway up my lower leg. And I always sit on, you know, there are different things made for you to sit on while you garden. And I always sit on something like that, never touch the ground with my you know, my knees or...
Yeah.
So anyway, no more trigger bites for me.
All right. Very good tips, Pat. Thank you so much for calling. Use a little bench, or there are specially made ones for gardeners, and they're very nice. You know, I mentioned Facebook earlier and posting photos, and Daniel sent a really cool photo of, looks like a piece of wood.
Yeah.
And it's got a very intricate pattern on it, wondering what caused it.
Yeah, so if you have a chance to check out Facebook, this is a definitely a neat picture. There's no insects actually present, but the type of insect tunneling is so diagnostic, we can tell who caused it. And in this case, it's a piece of wood that has some tunneling from bark beetles, a type of small beetle. And what stands out in this picture is that there's a distinct kind of thick line or tunnel, and then there are these thinner galleries that come off essentially perpendicular to that main tunnel. And with bark beetles, what often happens with some of our species is the female will make this one tunnel, and then the larvae or little grubs, they tunnel away from that perpendicular. So in this particular picture, we can see that we would have had dozens of larvae or grubs from these bark beetles beneath the wood. And they can really occur on a wide range of different trees. But when you start looking at your firewood and trees outdoors, you can recognize some of these things and really tell what's going on. It's pretty
neat. A really cool photo. Go to our Facebook page if at all possible and take a look, and you'll soon learn what it looks like. Let's go to Anne in Lake Geneva up next. Anne, hello.
Hello. Good afternoon, Larry, and thank you for having PJ on this afternoon.
Sure.
I have identified what I believe is a lesser carpenter bee. It's a tiny little thing, about 3/8 of an inch long. It looks like a black ant with wings. Very tiny little wings that it holds very close to its back. And you have to look very closely at it to see the wings. But the body, even though it looks like an ant, it's more bee-shaped. So when I did some online research, what I found was the lesser carpenter bee. I found four of these little critters on the inside of my patio door this past week in the really, really cold temperatures. It's a south-facing patio door, so there's a lot of warmth coming through it. And I have a cedar-sided home, rough-sawn cedar siding on the outside. So the research I found basically kind of told me that yes, they do find little tiny cracks and places to get in, but obviously somehow they're getting all the way through into my home. My concern is, is this nest going to get bigger? Do I have to get rid of them next spring and summer? It did say that they are pollinators.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of hoping that they will just go away, but I doubt it.
Okay, what do you think, BJ?
Yeah, so my first thought in a case like this is that there's all kinds of little creatures that can look ant-like, bee-like, or wasp-like, and it can be kind of hard to tell exactly what it is unless you get it under the microscope. So, Anne, if you do have some of these insects around, or if you see any more, I'd really encourage you to send some physical specimens in to me at the Insect Diagnostic Lab here at UW-Madison so I can really get a definitive ID under the microscope. That will give us a better idea of what's going on. When I think of bees, I wouldn't really expect you to be finding bees indoors this time of the year. Most of our bees are really going dormant through the winter. Honeybees can stay active, but they've got a different dynamic in their hive. So I really, at this point, can't tell you a whole lot until we can get a specimen to get a definitive ID on this one.
There we go. So if you can get one and send it in, probably in... What's the best way to mail in insects?
Sure. So the best way, if you've got physical specimens, especially of something hard-bodied, like an ant, a wasp, beetle, something like that, put it in a small container, a little Tupperware tub, empty film canister, anything along those lines, a little vial of some kind, so it doesn't get squished. And then you can mail it in to me. My mailing address for the diagnostic lab is 1630 Linden Drive, just like the tree, L-I-N-D-E-N. So 1630 Linden Drive in Madison, Wisconsin. And the zip code is 53706.
All right.
Is there a possibility that they could be a carpenter ant?
Well, so that's
a tiny little carpenter ant with wings.
Yeah, so that's one thing I'm concerned about, because I do get reports of ants this time of the year, be it carpenter ants, and there's a number of other species that would be smaller. Many of our carpenter ants are good size when you see, especially the winged ones, but there are some smaller blackish ants that, unless you get them under the microscope, we can't really tell for sure what they are. So I would lean more at this point. It may be some type of ant, but again, if you send a specimen, we'll know for sure, and then I can tell you if it's a concern, and if it is, what we can do about it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying this program.
Yeah, thank you, Ann. Appreciate it. Well, let's see. We have more callers. Before we go back to the phones, though, there's a book that you have that you really like. It's called Winter World by Bernd Heidrich.
Yeah, so if we've been talking about insects in winter, and if you just want to know more about how insects actually make it through the winter, this is a great book. It discusses overwintering biology of a wide range of different insects, be it making antifreeze or finding shelter. But if you're just interested in nature in general, the book isn't insect specific. It talks about how chipmunks and squirrels and other creatures make it through the winter too, and it's just kind of an easy read. So if you're looking for some books about winter biology, Winter World by Bernd Heidrich is really one of my favorite books on that topic.
Now we'll go to John in Racine. John, hi, thank you for calling.
Great show. I have a question. I have can't identify a bug. It's half the size of a fly, and it has wings that look kind of like a moth, and it's been 2 years, can't get rid of it.
And they're black, are they?
They're usually near water, like the shower.
Yeah.
Okay. So a couple of really important clues there. The most important being that you said it looks kind of moth-like. So we've actually got an unusual type of fly, which we commonly call either a moth fly or a drain fly. And this ties in with your other observation that they're usually near a water source, a drain of some type. So these moth or drain flies, what they do is the females lay eggs where there's some type of damp organic gunk, and that's where the larvae live, that juvenile stage. So typically, if you are seeing these in a bathroom, that tells me you've got some gunk building up inside your drain, maybe in the catch, under the tub, or in a sink. And typically what you got to do is use some Drano or other means to clean out your drains, give them a good cleaning, and that's going to get rid of food source for these insects, and things should quiet down after that. So given that description, I think you're dealing with moth or drain flies.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, John, for calling. And let's go to Bob in Madison next. Hi, Bob.
Hi. The past couple of summers, we've visited friends in La Crosse who have a houseboat on the Mississippi River. And as we travel around the river and stop at beaches and such, every time I've gotten off, I've gotten bitten terribly on my feet and ankles by sand fleas, I'm assuming. And I have two questions. One is, I'm the only one in the group that has been bitten. So why would they bite some people and not others? And the other question would be, is there anything that I can do to prevent that in the future? Is there any kind of a ointment or anything that I can apply?
Sure. So I've definitely heard of the term sand fleas before, and that's a common term that can get thrown around. But when I think of wandering, along beach shores and things like that in the upper Midwest, we actually don't have fleas in those areas. There are all kinds of tiny flies that can bite and cause irritation. You could also bump into things like swimmer's itch that could cause potentially some irritation on the legs. But I really don't know of something called a sand flea in our area that would be causing the skin irritation like that.
So what would you do in something a case like this then, PJ?
Yeah, well, good question. when I've been around water and I've bumped into things like swimmer's itch a couple of times, typically if you're in kind of murkier water, especially standing still for periods of time, certain thing. So if you've been in cases like that, I would maybe try not doing that. Seeing if that makes a difference. Also, I would wonder, and sometimes with insect bites, it can be hard to tell what caused it because there may be a delay from when you actually experience something. So if you stopped on your boat trip and went into the woods to relieve yourself, you know, you could have bumped into chiggers or something like that in the woods, and you just get the impression that it was something occurring on the beach. So I think in this case, it's kind of hard to tell exactly what's going on.
Yeah, but there's not a repellent that you would suggest?
Well, I'd say, you know, for common repellents, things like DEET and some of the other ones, you could certainly give that a try and just see if it makes a difference when you're going on these types of trips. So I'd say that might be kind of your best option at this point.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Bob. Let's go to Mary in Iron Ridge next. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I have a problem with large black ants. We hit with wood over the past month. We've noticed what seems to be ants coming from the wood. We bring the wood in from the cold. Within half a day, we have black ants seeming to go toward water. When you usually see ants in the house, you see them in a line coming and going from source back to someplace else. This is, they'll just show up at night, two dozen someplace. You kill them. The ant traps we put out haven't worked, and I'm wondering it's because we're constantly bringing in new firewood.
Yeah, so in a case like this, I would suspect you might be dealing with something like carpenter ants, although with firewood, you could have a number of other species of ants that pop up in these cases. In a case like this, if it is something like carpenter ants, they're really in the firewood because it's probably some, you know, little bit of rot going on in the wood, and they happen to like those habitats. They would typically be out in the woods in that rotting tree rather than indoors, and what's happening is we're simply bringing them in. So that warmth is telling them it's springtime when it really isn't. They become active as soon as you burn or use up that wood. That's going to be the end of them. They're probably not going to be able to leave the wood and establish themselves very well. The best thing to do in these situations, if possible, is keep that wood out in a cold or colder spot as long as possible. Bring it in and only hold it for a short amount of time. If you burn it up quickly, then that should help reduce or eliminate these types of problems. In terms of using the ant baits, if it is something like carpenter ants, our carpenter ants really don't respond very well to the ant baits products you can get at the hardware store. So that would be one reason why they may be potentially ignoring those baits you're putting out.
Is there something else we could use instead of those baits?
Unfortunately, not really anything that's going to be convenient. As I mentioned a moment ago, probably the best solution is just keep the wood out in the cold. Otherwise, if you can bring wood indoors, but maybe keep it in some type of big Tupperware or other container so that the ants are simply staying in there rather than wandering all over the house, that may be an option as well. But because we're burning this wood up, baits really aren't going to be a good option. Baits work very, very slowly over time compared to insecticide sprays. And because we're burning the wood, we wouldn't want to use insecticide sprays either.
Oh, good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Got a kind of a cool note on Facebook from Katie, who says, I heard that the migration of monarchs is directly related to the Day of the Dead celebration in Mexico, and that the butterflies were seen as the loved ones' souls returning home. Is that a story that you've heard?
Oh, interesting. So I personally have not heard that story before. When it comes to the monarch migration, it can actually depend a little bit year to year based on the weather down there. When the weather conditions are just right, and it's typically, you know, usually sometime in mid to late March or so, that the monarchs are starting to make their northward migration and move up back into places like Texas for that first generation. So I haven't specifically heard that story. I don't know how the dates correspond. well to the actual monarch migration, but I'll have to do some digging and read up on that myself.
That's a kind of a cool story, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
What's the what was the monarch situation right now overall?
Yes, that's a good question. I actually haven't heard any updates recently. Often each year, sometime in about February or March, we hear of a couple of reports, and scientists down there essentially go out, and they're not counting individual butterflies, but they estimate the area occupied by the overwintering monarchs, and they can use density to get a rough estimate of the numbers of monarchs down there. I haven't heard any reports yet for this year, so I don't know the current status on that, but probably in the next couple weeks, it wouldn't surprise me if we got some of those numbers in terms of how the monarchs are doing this winter.
Let's see, we have other callers online here. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call. We've got a minute or two left. What are the, at this time of the year, PJ, what comes into the insect diagnostic lab?
Oh, all kinds of things, Larry. I've been getting a number of ant samples recently. We just had that caller discussing ants and firewood, for example. I get a lot of reports of what I would refer to as firewood insects, where you've got various beetles, longhorn beetles, and things like that that are developing in that firewood, and especially if you don't use your fireplace often, maybe once, twice a month on weekends, you bring that firewood in and it sits for weeks and weeks, and the insects that were in there were perhaps larvae. They think it's spring, so they finish their development, and you get these weird, funky-looking beetles that pop out and wander around the house, and really, they're harmless. I've had a lot of reports of those. I've still had a couple of reports of things like bed bugs this time of the year, which aren't really affected by the cold because they're indoors. So really a surprising mix of insects coming in this time of the year to the diagnostic lab.
Thinking back to my youth, we had a kind of an attractive looking box that we kept our wood in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, you know, it had a nice cover on it and everything, and I'm wondering if the reason for that was to keep the insects out of the house. I mean,
yeah, it was the confined. Box outdoors, just outside.
No,
your
it was
front door?
it was indoors.
Indoor,
you brought
okay.
them in, and you put the wood in there, and then you closed the box.
It certainly couldn't hurt to have something like that. It might help contain the insects. And also, if you have firewood with lots of insects, say, tunneling in it, you tend to get a lot of sawdust that tumbles out as well. So a box like that could help contain the sawdust and just helps you prevent a little bit of mess around the home, too.
Well, I tell you what, here we're running out of time. And for those who are interested in the Insect Diagnostic Lab, let's go back through that again. How do they send samples and so forth?
Sure. So the best way, if you got a physical sample, something like ants or beetles, put it in a small container, little Tupperware, plastic vial. I've had folks use empty pill bottles or even small mason jars, those types of things. That way it prevents the insects from getting squished. If you just take the insects and put them in an envelope, going through all those conveyors at the post office, and I've gotten pretty good at identifying powdered ants, but it takes me a bit longer. So take the little container, put it in a padded mailing envelope or a box with some newspaper, bubble wrap, and you can mail it to me. The address for the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab is 1630 Linden Drive, L-I-N-D-E-N. So again, that's 1630 Linden Drive, and it's in Madison, Wisconsin, and the zip code is 53706.
Well, PJ, it's always a pleasure. You're going to be back on March 28th, and we'll do this all over again. Thank you so much in the meantime for being with us.
My pleasure, Larry.
PJ Leash, degrees in biological sciences and entomology from the UW-Madison, and he is the manager of the UW-Madison Insect Diagnostic Lab. And he'll be back March 28th. We'll do this all over again. Tomorrow at 11, our tax expert is back to help you with your tax questions and to tell us how the new tax regulations may affect you. So I hope you can join us on the Ideas Network. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store.